Good morning.
Hi.
Welcome to the Access Oral presentation process. Before we get started, I'd like everyone to introduce themselves and identify the organization that they are with. My name is Virginia Roundtree, and I'm the Assistant Director for Clinical and Operations in the Division of Healthcare Management here at Access.
Good morning. Elizabeth Carpio, Assistant Director for the Division of Fee-for-Service Management here at Access.
Melissa Arzabal, Case Management Program Manager with the Division of Healthcare Management here at Access.
Hi, Carlicia Smith, Altec's Case Management Specialist with DHCM as well.
Good morning, I'm Andrew Cohen. I'm a consultant assisting the agency with the Altec's program.
DHCM with Altec.
And she's the proctor for today.
Hi, good morning. I'm Chad Corbett, the Vice President of Long-Term Care for Mercy Care Plan.
Good morning. I'm Charlton Wilson. I'm the Chief Medical Officer.
I'm Tad Gary with Systems of Care Department.
Hi. Pat Wiedman, Director of Provider Relations with Mercy.
Pat here. I'm with Mercy Care Long-Term Care.
Hi, good morning. It's Sandy Verheide. I'm Vice President of Quality Management for Mercy Care.
Okay. Carlicia Smith is here today as an observer. However, in the event one of the three evaluators is unable to participate in all of the oral presentations, Carlicia will serve as an evaluator. Please note that Access has scripted what we will be telling you today. This is to ensure that we share the same information with all offerers. Participating in the oral presentation process doesn't mean that you will be offered a contract, nor does it have any impact to the other areas of the submission or evaluation process. You were instructed to place all of your electronic devices in the basket at the door. Yeah, hopefully, if not. This is a reminder that if you have not placed your electronic items in the basket, please do so now. You may collect these items at the completion of the oral presentations. So any phones, smartwatches?
We left our phones with our assistant downstairs, so we will not even bring them up.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great.
No smartwatches.
First, some housekeeping information. We've placed water bottles on the credenza, and bathrooms are located in the vestibule near the elevators. The oral presentation will be limited to 3 hours. The oral presentation will be audio taped by Access solely for the agency's use in the evaluation process. During the presentations, you are asked to present solutions to 2 questions. The process will be as follows. The offeror will be given a written copy of each question for which to prepare oral presentation responses. Only 1 question will initially be provided. The 2nd question will be provided upon completion of the offeror's presentation of the 1st question. Access will leave the room for 45 minutes to allow the offeror's team to discuss each question and to prepare a timed oral presentation. There will be no audio taping during this time. Use of electronic devices is prohibited, including cell phones, telephones, smartwatches, tablets, etc. Failure to comply with these instructions may adversely impact the scoring of the oral presentation. The offeror is permitted to utilize any hard copy reference material brought with them, including copies of policies and procedures, to assist with preparing for the presentation. Access has provided a whiteboard, and we have a flip chart there, and markers for offerer's use in preparing for the oral presentation. A proctor will be present during the offeror's 45-minute preparation period. If the proctor observes the use of electronic devices, she will stop the process and notify the chief procurement officer. The chief procurement officer reserves the right to terminate the offeror's oral presentation. The offeror will be provided 30 minutes to orally present a response to the question posed. The offeror is not required to use the entire time allotted. Any one or more of the offeror's presentation team may present. Access staff will only respond to process or procedure questions related to the oral presentation process. Any questions? Okay. So we will.
No clock in the room.
We will time the 45 minutes.
Yeah. Am I able to put my watch here for our timing purpose for 30 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. I'll be keeping track of time too. So.
If you want to know what, how much time is left, you can certainly ask her.
Okay.
You can hand them out. I go find mine.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll read the first question. A 42-year-old member who was recently determined eligible for access and who is newly enrolled in the offers plan is a female with paraplegia and bipolar disorder. The member has been unemployed off and on for the past 4 years, in part due to her poor personal hygiene. She had difficulty maintaining a stable living environment and was evicted from her apartment. For the past 6 months, she has been living with various acquaintances, but is now living on the street. Describe how the offerer will address services and supports for this member. So access staff will leave the room now, and you'll have the 45-minute preparation time. Okay, the 45 minutes of preparation time is now over. You will be given 30 minutes to present your response to the question, though you need not use the entire time allotted. During the presentation, you will receive both a 5-minute and 1-minute and a couple other minutes warning to allow you the opportunity to wrap up the presentation. Please let us know when the presentation is complete. We'll turn it over to you.
Good morning, I'm Chad Corbett, Vice President of Long-Term Care Program at Mercy Care Plan. We have been a contracted health plan with Access since 2001. We built our Altex program on being member and family centered, where our members directing their care, and our role is to safeguard our members, their rights, and ensure that they have access to both the community and to the providers. We do this by focusing on improving the members' outcomes, continuously focusing on quality improvement, and ensuring members have access to all the services. We do this well. The passion, the accountability, and the teamwork that we bring to our work each day is what makes Mercy Care Plan the plan that it is. Person-centered care is about engaging the members to share their life experience, their functional status, their goals, their quality of life, and to listen to them. We try to increase the members' access to preventive care through our high-quality, high-value partners with the hopes to decrease the members' reliance on high-cost facility-based services. It's important to understand who the stakeholders in the community are and that we build these trusting relationships with them. They provide so much insight, and it's not our position to replace and develop new strategies, but to work alongside our providers and community partners to reduce the complexities and focus on the excellence of service for our members. I would like to now introduce my teammates, and can you please start, Pat, can you please start with your name and your position at Mercy Care?
I'm Pat Heron, and I'm the operations manager in case management in long-term care.
I'm Charlton Wilson, I'm the chief medical officer.
I'm Sandy, and I'm the quality management vice president.
I'm Todd Gary, head of systems of care.
Yes, Pat Weaven, I'm the Director of Provider Relations.
In the next few minutes that we have, we'll be relating how Mercy Care Plan will not only meet this person's needs, but also how we will provide the silver lining. We are familiar with members like this, and we use our expertise and processes to meet the member's needs. This is a new member who is currently on the streets, and our main concern will be addressing her housing and ensure that she is safe. Pat, can you talk a little bit on the role of the case manager and what we would be doing?
Right. So for this member, since she is on the street, the case manager's first concern is to make contact with her and to identify a safe location to do this assessment, to go through the assessment with the member. It would be a good situation if we can do this assessment in at a shelter setting, maybe a human services campus where we would have availability of other services. So once a case manager identifies a location to do the assessment with the member, one of the first things she would want to do is to reassure the member that we're there to help her, to find out from the member, what do you want from us? What do you need from us? You know, what do you want to tell us about your situation right now? So that we know where she's coming from before we launch into our assessment. Now, of course, we have a full assessment range that covers a lot of different areas for this member. One of them would be certainly her living environment, which we've already touched on at some point, and her housing, you know, where she was living, what was her situation, and can she tell us what was happening and why she was unable to maintain a stable living environment. Our assessment would cover her preferences for housing, education, and employment, if she has any desires or aspirations in those areas, and we would make referrals to, which Tad's going to talk about a little bit later, on what her options are there. We'd certainly cover, you know, where is she getting her medical care up until now? Does she have private insurance? Is she on Medicare? She's young, but she's been a paraplegic for some years, so she may be on Medicare at this point. So case manager would look at all those, what that is. Also, what her income source is. Since she has been living in an apartment, she has, we're assuming, some type of income. We want to see what that is. So what her resources are for future housing. Discussing with her her medical conditions, what her diagnoses are, who her PCP is, does she have a PCP, has she been going to a doctor, and then if not, you know, that's an area that the case manager would work with her on, to getting established with a primary care physician initially, and then any specialist that she would need. Does she have medications, you know, is she taking those, or does she need those order? Does she need to see a doctor to get prescriptions for chronic medications that she should be on? Being a paraplegic, she most likely has some DME needs. Does she have a wheelchair that's functioning? Does she need repairs to it? Does she need a new wheelchair for immediate needs? And then, of course, if she's placed in housing, is she going to need adaptive equipment for bathrooms and things like that? She has identified some issues with her skin, with her hygiene, which, and being a paraplegic, there's a good chance that she may have skin issues. And so we have a tool that the case, our assessment has, that will, so we can evaluate, is she at risk for skin breakdown, which just on the surface of it appears that she is. So the case manager would be exploring getting a home health nurse to evaluate her skin to see if she needs treatment right away. Her behavioral health, she has in the description here that she's a bipolar disorder. And so, you know, does she have current treatment that she's receiving? We would make referrals to behavioral health providers within long-term care. And it may be that this member would be someone who would be a good candidate for our behavioral health team. So in Mercy Long-Term Care, we have specialized case managers for behavioral health members and for members who have medically complex medical conditions. So we either have nurse case managers or licensed behavioral health case managers for members who need that. So we would explore if that would be a good option for her. They also talked to her about her formal and informal supports. You know, we want to know the whole picture with our members, and what's available for her. You know, is she interested in going back to living with friends? Is there something that we can do to make that work for her? So we need to know what her informal supports are as far as friends and family. You know, this doesn't mention if she has any family, but we'd want to find out from her, is there anybody that she would want us to have contact with, that she would, that could possibly be in her life and be a support for her? She's a young person, so, and she has worked in the past, so she has a lot of strengths that we would want to build on. So the assessment process initially would be just gathering as much information as we can, you know, from her about what her needs are, what she wants to accomplish in life. And so then we would, in the referrals that we would make to either PCP or behavioral health and health, housing, education, and employment resources, you know, we would help her to increase her independence. So Dr. Wilson can talk a little bit about how we'd handle her medical care.
You know, and the other thing that you reminded me of there, Pat, is that if she is on traditional Medicare or on another Medicare Advantage plan, we would work with her to educate her the advantages of having an aligned Medicare plan. And not only because of the benefits that she gets through the supplemental benefits, but in the past we've shown through an Avalier study that people who are on an aligned Mercy Care Advantage plan have improved outcomes and better use of preventive services. So there's a lot of advantages there. As you mentioned, part of this whole process that we're working on here right now would also be we got to address our integrated behavioral and physical health efforts here. So one of the early things that we would do in this is we would probably convene and pull together an interdisciplinary team. And that interdisciplinary team would be the medical directors, pharmacy directors, the case managers, all those resources from the health plan, but also include and offer the opportunity for the member's family, their primary care provider, and any specialist to participate in this as well. Speaking of that primary care provider, one of the important things that we do is we would work to help educate our member the benefits of using one of our high-quality, high-value providers. These are providers that we know provide a better experience at a lower cost outcome and have proven their ability to deliver high quality care. Often they are integrated behavioral and physical health processes if they're in a location, or even if they are in one of our high quality, high value providers who provide in-home or in-facility services. And if the person needed transportation or a linkage to one of those things, we would make sure that this person has accessibility. One of the things that by doing this, we've been able to actually reduce hospital readmissions by over 30% and visits to emergency room by over 3% because of the increased accessibility and the incentives that we use to make sure that the high quality provider is being cared for. We also use incentives to make sure that things like antibiotic use, other things like that are appropriately done so that we achieve the highest quality value for the member and for the state. Something that's important to this person, along with pulling together all this primary care issues as well, we know that she has paraplegia, and we would do a great assessment to make sure that we understand all the issues there. We also have a terrific network of specialists, neurologists, neurosurgeons, wound care specialists who could bring their services to this. If rehabilitation and habilitation services are needed, we can bring both of those, both physical therapy, occupational therapy, and we can make those occur in the home or in a place of her need. We have a terrific dental benefit, or are able to manage that dental benefit, including new and expanded benefits in this area, and align it with any other benefits such as the Mercy Care Advantage. Other thing that was mentioned there through our through this assessment here is there may be needs to address durable medical equipment. Pat, you already talked a little bit about the wheelchair, additions to wheelchair, mobility issues, and whether those are repairs or replacements. We have excellent processes that will assure these are done in a member-centered way that helps her achieve her highest goals. The other thing that was mentioned for our member here is that hygiene seems to have been an issue that has caused some challenges to home and some other things like that. So sometimes the medical assessment and the integrated behavioral health assessment can find root causes and address those. I know Tad will talk a little bit more about the potential underlying behavioral health causes in a little bit, but I'm going to say if this issue has to do with incontinence supplies or training or issues in and around care for oneself after a becoming paraplegic, we will assure that we provide incontinence supplies both for preventive as well as treatment services, as well as a full range of easily available, easily accessible services in and around that area. One last couple of things that I'll just mention here is that if in the future we find that we need home health, we have a terrific home health services that can come. We have in-home pharmacists that can provide medication adherence, pill organizers, other things like that. And for somebody who's been a little bit of homeless, it's very possible that maintaining medication adherence and compliance has been a challenge. So we'd look to find innovative ways of doing that. If this person's primary care providers are not currently connected or not one of the high-value connected providers, we can actually encourage them to participate in our Practice Innovation Institute, which is a $14.5 million CMS grant that we brought to help improve the quality of care among primary care and specialist providers and behavioral health providers throughout Arizona. And by doing so, our providers will now be able to link through Care Unify and Health Information Exchange the ability to get real-time information about their patients and where they are and improve patient outcomes. Finally, if we need to do anything more to help remind and shorten qualities, and Sandy, I know you can help me on this as well, We have processes to reach our members that assure that the quality outcomes are being occurred, everywhere from text messaging to voice recording to outreach calls to make sure that gaps in care and the highest quality outcomes are achieved.
Yeah, and to build on what you just said, because I think that was just, you know, a really great story. What the prevention and wellness team does is, of course, try to make sure that, as Dr. Wilson said, gaps in care are covered, and try to get a hold of members. Now, this may be a member that would qualify for and opt into the SafeLink phone system. It's federally subsidized, it wouldn't cost her anything, at which time we would have better ability to contact her, give her reminders of well visits that are due, text messaging. This last quarter alone, we sent over 30,000 text messages out to members. These are access approved dialogues that it seems to be really popular with the members to get the text messaging. Also, once she has a stable address, our team has outreach ability then to help her set up not only any of her appointments, but do a three-way call with our member services and get transportation on board so that she doesn't have to worry about how she's going to get there. We coordinate with written reminders, automatic telephone reminders, written education, and reminders to members about preventative services so that when they go and see their PCP, they know the questions to ask and kind of what to expect in their care.
Great. Thank you, Sandy. Hey, Kat, we'll turn it over to you if you can talk a little bit about the behavior health component and what we'd be doing with evaluations.
Absolutely. So at Mercy Care Plan, we are very proud of our strong behavioral health program that we have developed. We have significant experience, and this program is really grounded on the 9 guiding principles for recovery-oriented adult behavioral health services and system, and is really centered around supporting our members and families in their recovery journey as well as their resiliency. This is a member that actually comes to the table, like all our members, with strengths. And I want to first just highlight that this individual clearly has strengths, one of which are friends involved, very resourceful, we can see, and also has, for example, some employment skills that can be drawn upon. And as I talk, I'll highlight some of the opportunities, I think, by building upon those strengths. One of the important elements with addressing her behavioral health needs is that biopsychosocial assessment. And I will say another opportunity within our program that we see a benefit, which is we provide comprehensive behavioral health training to our case management staff. That training includes identifying the signs and symptoms of a potential behavioral health need, but also navigating to behavioral health services and also knowing who to rely upon internally for support in helping an individual meet their behavioral health needs, such as our licensed behavioral health coordinator, members on our high-risk behavioral health case management team, and whatnot. So this is a very comprehensive behavioral health training that we have been able to evolve throughout the years. Going back to the comprehensive biopsychosocial assessment, our case managers, all of our case managers do that assessment. Also, for this member, we'd want to look at the potential need for special assistance. This scenario does not specifically speak to the individual being having a classification of serious mental illness, but I will say that we would look at the possible need of special assistance and follow specifically to the Access AMPM Policy 320. We would, through identification of the needs through our assessment, we would then likely make behavioral health referrals for this individual. This would include referrals for psychiatric services. Clearly, if she has bipolar disorder, we would want to look at the potential need for psychopharmacology to be involved. But that referral would also help us confirm a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, as well as look at other co-occurring mental health conditions, such as anxiety, personality disorder, ADHD, for example, as well as looking at possible substance abuse diagnosis and the need for additional services. Through that, we would also look at working with our contracted behavioral health providers, the development of a crisis plan, making sure that our members knows how to access behavioral health covered crisis services, also identify potential triggers to help her prevent from getting to that crisis level. We would really want to make sure that a crisis plan is developed for this individual. So I already talked about her potentially needing psychotropic medications. We would also look at potentially, given her situation and having some independent living skills needs potentially, we may talk with her about possibly residential treatment as an option, but we would do that in collaboration with her, and if we were able to engage the family, with the family as well. We would also look at providing the member and family psychoeducation to talk about illness management, potential risk factors, just as examples. Also looking at potentially individual therapy. There has shown success for individuals with diagnosis of bipolar around referring for cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT. So we would also talk with her about potentially those referrals as well. And again, in collaboration with our contracted provider. Also looking at family psychoeducation, we would make referrals potentially for, and also peer support services, whether it's at a consumer-run provider or one of our other comprehensive behavioral health providers. We would really look at that, addressing all of those needs and working so closely with her and her family, as well as our contracted providers. Another critical piece to this is really addressing her social needs, which is her employment needs first, as well as her housing needs as priority. So we would, through having an assessment, employment assessment, we would look at the potential for a referral to Rehab Services Administration. We have a collaborative protocol with them to help with seamless referrals over to them. We'd also look at potentially supported employment done through the SAMHSA evidence-based practice of supported employment. We have contracted providers that can provide that and look at potentially addressing the personal hygiene within the workspace, as well as any other job skills that may be needed in order for her to obtain or maintain employment. Also, housing obviously is a priority for this individual, and that is very clear with that scenario. And so at day one, we will be working to look at her getting a stable situation. So we would assess that. We would look at potential resources. We've had lots of success with our collaborations with the cities around vouchers. We have one, for example, with the City of Phoenix, where they provide vouchers to our members, and we provide the Medicaid-covered support services. So we may look at leveraging some of that, as well as there's some bridge programs that we've been able to partner with, for example, with City of Phoenix that's being developed now, that she may benefit from the bridge program while she's looking for permanent housing. So we would clearly look at those social aspects and treat that as one of our priorities. Obviously, she has a multitude of needs that need to be addressed. I'm going to, at this point, turn it over to Pam.
Yes, I'd also like to add that Mercy Care Plan has a very robust network of providers of all types, including several strategic provider partners that deliver high-quality, high-value care to our members while engaging them and educating them in their personal and healthcare needs. In addition, I have a very large team of provider relations staff that are trained to assist providers with operational issues such as claims issues, changes to policy, understanding their provider requirements in their contract. And we also assist them if they have a difficult member. We have ways that we can assist them in dealing with that member and our team at Mercy Care. And we've also have a dedicated Altex provider relations team. This came as a result of some of the follow-up on provider surveys. They have different needs than some of our providers, especially those HCBS and Altex, or HCBS, ALFs, and skilled nursing facility providers. Since we've added this team and some of the other steps that we've taken, we've increased our provider survey results by 11 points. past year in 2016, we were able to score 83.2% on our survey, which is really outstanding in our area. One other thing that I want to mention, we also have a member advisory council group that this member may potentially take advantage of, because we do have several providers that are also represented on that council. One of them is from our CEO from Ability 360, who also suffers from, you know, spinal cord injuries, and they may be able to assist this member with some of her paraplegic issues.
Great. Thank you, Patty. Pat, can we move over and talk a little bit about the care plan and what type of services we may put in place?
So after this, the complete assessment, and we find that members, especially in a situation like this member who is out in the street and in a most stressful situation, I'm sure, you know, hearing all the benefits that are available for long-term care members and all the range of services, you know, different housing and medical supports and in-home service supports may help her to develop and tell us what she really would like to do. You know, what is her goal? And so the case manager would work with her on meeting that goal, as, you know, with using the services that we can authorize through Altex, as far as well as community resources that we can utilize. So we would certainly focus immediately on her housing needs, and because we have options available, that she may be in residential treatment, she may be able to go back with friends with some in-home supports where it wasn't helpful, she wasn't able to be successful before, but if we provided in-home support with her to help her with her hygiene, it may be more successful. So there's a option, whatever option she wants to try and is able to, you know, we would work with her on. It may be that she would want to be in an assisted living type of a situation where we can utilize our network of homes for that. We would also work with her on home health nursing. I think in almost any setting that she's in, to assist her with medication compliance, and the case manager would complete the DME referrals if she needs additional DME, if she needs new DME, the referrals for behavioral health providers, and then to follow up with her on a regular basis and always be available to her. Hopefully she will have a SafeLink phone or a phone of her own so that the case manager can maintain contact with her. And of course, we'll see her in 90 days, but I would think in a case like this, the case manager would maintain a lot closer relationship and see her more often to make sure that she is settled into her new home, and then work with her to update her care plan, her individualized care plan, and if her needs change, her preferences change, and we work with her to utilize other services that are available to do that.
And then I think it's also important to note that on the care plan, we're not only putting the Medicaid-covered services on there, but we're also putting the community mm-hmm. support services that may be available from outside sources. Right. So, for example, we would talk a bit about the National Alliance for Mental Illness. There's a great chapter here. There's one in Tucson. There's up in northern Arizona. So we would talk about those community support services as well, those community resources, and also put that on the care plan and follow up to and help connect her or reconnect her to those services.
Right. And one of those services I just wanted to mention too is the peer support. And we have a relationship with, and we have members who have been active at Ability 360. There is SPOFIT area, and so that's an area where she may be able to interact with other people who are her age and have similar type of an injury, and maybe give her a little bit of support in knowing that it is possible to make it in the world in her situation.
You know, and one of the things that makes us successful in this area is our ability to provide culturally competent and relevant care. We work with our providers, with our case managers, all of our staff, member services call to make sure that we have a number of different programs so that whatever her background is, that we either have the ability to connect her through our relationships with somebody with a similar background and or person at least has an understanding and awareness about what those are. We also do above and beyond things, such as committing to having American Indian liaisons so that we can have relationships with that important group in our organization, and Veterans Administration liaisons. One of the things that also this really helps us with and all that kind of stuff is understanding what her needs are and the ability to create that relationship, and particularly to have sometimes difficult conversations, such as the ability to make sure that a person has an advanced care plan or a power of attorney in case that is needed in the future. In fact, over 77% of all Mercy Care long-term care patients have had completed assessments or in this area.
Great. You know, yes. And one more thing I want to add quickly is our Mercy Paws program. I don't know if you've heard about it, but if this lady would happen to have a pet and that pet has been a hindrance to her ability to get to a physician or other, or if she would need some inpatient kind of care for a while, we would go in and make sure that we foster that animal for her so that she does not have to have a barrier between her and her beloved pet to get care.
Another thing I was sort of thinking of, Chad, if you don't mind, because Mercy Care Plan and its affiliated plans have had a long history of an understanding of people and the challenges they have when they have serious illnesses, our appeals, grievance, and other programs like that are reflective of the goal of making sure that everyone gets the same level of care, whatever their background or designation.
Thank you, Dr. Wilson. So I think we've shared a little bit. It's not really the role of the health plan to come in and to create the care plan. It's really to sit down and to listen what the member wants and how can we then help coordinate and work with that member. We're not here to just fill out a care plan, but to listen to the member through motivational interviewing and allowing that discussion. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Okay. We will now provide you with question two.
Thank you. I'll pass them down now. Thank you.
Okay, a 35-year-old female is an enrolled member of the Offers Plan and has a diagnosis of ALS. She has recently begun to experience difficulty speaking. She is a mother of three children, 8, 10, and 15 years of age, and lives with her long-term female partner. They are concerned about the progression of the disease prior to her children reaching adulthood. She has remarked on numerous occasions that she is afraid she might miss key milestones in the lives of her children. Additionally, she has expressed concern if her partner will be able to make decisions should she become incapacitated. Describe how the offeror will address services and supports for this member. The access staff will now leave the room and you'll have 45 minutes.
Another 45 minutes?
45 minutes to prepare for this one.
Thank you.
Okay. The 45 minutes of preparation time is now over. You will be given 30 minutes to present your response to the question, though you need not use the entire time allotted. During the presentation, you will receive both a 5-minute and 1-minute warning to allow you the opportunity to wrap up the presentation. Please let us know when the presentation is complete. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. It's always our goal to keep our members in the least restrictive setting and to keep the families together. In fact, 75% of our members actually live outside of a skilled nursing facility and in their communities. As she has three children, this will also be very critical that they are being taken care of following their wishes along with their mother's. It's important that she has access to a wide network of providers while being member-centered, also with being person-centered for her care planning. Pat, can you start it off by talking about her current situation?
So this member, having a diagnosis of ALS, we know that is a serious diagnosis that, and so we want a case manager assigned to this member who is going to be well aware of the progression of this disease, to watch for issues, to be that are going to affect her living situation and her health. So we would have one of our RN case managers assigned to this case who will be able to follow her through staying at home, even through whatever stages of her disease come about. So another thing that the case manager, in addition to this is an established member, so the case manager will have known this member in the past, but she will also make sure that she has covered with this member, you know, what medical plan is she on, what Medicare plan is she on, and is she on MCA, which would be our Medicare Advantage plan that would allow us to better coordinate her care. So that's an area that the case manager would cover with her. In the scenario here, she has expressed a concern about her children and her partner being able to be available for them and take care of them after she's not around anymore. And so one of the main things we would do is talk to her about her advance directives, and also in this case, even more than an advance directive, but she would be referred to, if she needs it, if she hasn't already dealt with this, community legal services to help her make sure that everything is in order so that her partner will be able to make decisions for her children after she dies. So we have association with some community resources, legal resources in the community that we would refer her to. She also, we would also make sure that she's maintaining her PCP or specialist visits and appointments, and we have our in-home physician visit that would be a referral for her, because that would alleviate her from having to make some of her visits anyway. So we know that she may have specialist visits, but at least we can have the primary care physician come in. And our in-home physician program provides not only 90-day visits, 30-day visits, but whenever 24-hour contact with one of the members of the care team. So the case manager will have made review her medications with her. Is she having any issues with getting any medications that she has? Is she having any problems following the medical regimen that has been ordered for her? She has. She may have DME needs right now. We don't know how far her ALS has progressed at this point, but we could certainly assist her with making sure that she has her DME needs met and any special supplies that she might need. The case manager would talk with her about her skin care. We have a safe tool that our case managers complete that identifies both risk factors for skin condition and also fall risk. So we don't know if her ALS is affecting her ability to walk around, and if falling is an issue for her. We want to identify that as soon as possible if it is, and help deal with what we can to prevent it. And her ADLs, we don't know how much help she's going to need or she needs right now, but so the case manager will be doing an assessment to determine how much in-home assistance does she need right now as far as attendant care or nursing care. We know that her partner is with her and may want to provide some of her care, but it's been our experience that when we have someone at home that needs constant care, that we want to have relief for the in-home caregiver, whether she's a formal paid caregiver or just an informal caregiver. We want to make sure that there is relief for her so that she can have quality time with the member and not be so exhausted from providing 24/7 care that she isn't available to her emotionally. We would also make any referrals for behavioral health that she, if she's expressing any, or we've identified any triggers for depression or any other areas, we would make a referral for behavioral health treatment in the home. Talk about how we would provide that. As far as other informal supports, does she have any other family or friends that are coming in to help her out? Does she have any spiritual needs? Is there churches that she would want to help assistance to get to the church, or somebody from the church can come in and see her if that's what she chooses? So her strengths is she has a strong family, and that's very important. And so our goal and her goal seems to be that she wants to be with her family. So we're going to do whatever we can to help her stay at home, and we'll talk a little bit more about our care plan as we get farther along. So Dr. Wilson, what do you think about her medical care?
Well, Trevor, you know, this would probably be a situation in which we might even pull together an interdisciplinary team with staff from the health plan, as well as the member, the family support, the primary care provider, and any specialist. We'd get together and understand whether and do some care planning around her entire medical care needs. If we haven't already, we probably would have, but if we wouldn't, back to your point earlier, we would have brought in one of our high-quality, high-value in-home PCPs, which may be a nurse, a physician, behavioral health specialist, with a wound care specialist with experience in and around complex medical conditions like this that can deliver integrated care in a place that is necessary. Along with that primary care processes, we actually can link also to our specialty network, which includes neurologists and world-leading specialists, including at places like Barrow's Neurology Institute and other places like that. In this phase here, or potential phase in her life where she may be thinking about action and active treatment in her process, we'd bring together specialty pharmacies, other things like that necessary for hers. If she chose to participate in clinical trials, we have processes and follow the access policies completely that allow people to access to clinical trials. We know that there may be care needs issues around her, such as durable medical equipment, including things such as mobility assist devices and things like that, as well as eventually issues in and around her ability to maintain her oral airway passage, so respiratory care, speaking and swallowing evaluations and services, assessments by occupational therapists and speech therapists to make sure that the right services are there. Nutrition is going to be important in her life, whether it's through our processes where our providers bring specialty nutrition services, thickening agents, or if necessary, feeding tubes. Communication may become an issue as she talks about it more, so augmented communication devices, we'll take a look at the full range of those opportunities there. And if necessary, if somewhere down the road, ventilator support, we're actually able to provide full-time in-home ventilator support with nursing and physician services that are skilled in doing this and in preventing respiratory illnesses or compromise. At some point in the future, or concurrently as a part of all this, non-curative planning may be necessary. We have a terrific relationship with numerous palliative care providers. And while this is a unique situation, our palliative care pilots and other conditions, such as dementia care, have shown that the person has been able to stay at home, avoid hospitalizations, prevent readmissions, and while maintaining a independence of life, and in fact, also reducing healthcare costs. As time progresses and as a part of our relationship, we'll have conversations with our member about her wishes and her family's wishes. She's already mentioned a number of key milestones and goals. We would develop a plan that helps her best meet those goals. If at some point the proper level of care is end-of-life care and advanced life care, not only do we have hospice providers, but we'll coordinate her Medicare benefit through hospice, as well as her other services through the Altex benefit, so that makes sure that it's seamless and meets her needs. This may be in-house, it may be in a facility, and we'd coordinate that in a way. In fact, over 77, and we'd have these conversations, Pat, you had mentioned earlier, over 77% of all our people, members in our plan, have had a POA or advanced care planning process in place, and we'd bring the full resources of these to make sure that we're meeting social, spiritual, biopsychosocial needs. I'll come back to a little bit later about some of our role. We know that merely having an advanced care plan alone is not necessary. You need to bring a lot of supports and leadership within the state. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. Sandy, I do want to ask, you know, to mention here that even when people have chronic debilitating diseases or even terminal life, we still want to make sure that people receive the appropriate preventive services.
So, again, through our prevention and wellness programs, we have a lot of mechanisms to outreach to members to ensure that they're aware it's time for your flu shot. We really would like to see you get your Pneumovax. We have great partnerships with Walgreens and our Minute Clinics, so people can actually utilize those services. We just want to make sure that we continue to provide, you know, the highest quality of care to members, whether they're homebound or whether they still have access to their primary care provider outside their home.
Thank you, Sandy.
I'll talk a little bit about the potential behavioral health needs for this member as well as her family. And so, again, as I noted earlier, the Mercy Care Plan All-Tex Behavioral Health Program is really a strong behavioral health program that is built upon significant experience of our staff as well as just the overall experience of the program for many years. This program is also grounded on the 9 guiding principles for recovery-oriented adult behavioral services and systems, as well as the Arizona Vision and 12 principles for children. The other aspect of our behavioral health program is really about the strong behavioral health training that we provide our case management staff in particular. This training really focuses heavily on how to identify the behavioral health needs of our members we have the opportunity to serve, as well as the family needs, but then also how to navigate towards those behavioral health services, as well as who to go to when they need some additional expertise to help them either identify potential needs as well as coordinate services. And those other individuals may be our licensed behavioral health coordinator, it might be one of our medical directors, it may be as well as someone on our high-risk case management behavioral health team as well. So those are added supports that they have as and in addition to our interdisciplinary teams that are made up of behavioral health professionals, physical health professionals, pharmacists, and whatnot. In this particular scenario, although it doesn't specifically speak to a need for behavioral health services, we absolutely would conduct, as Pat had highlighted, a biopsychosocial assessment to help us really identify a potential behavioral health need. I will kind of infer from this scenario that there likely is a behavioral health need for this member as well as her family. And given the complexity of her physical diagnosis and as well as what the research has suggested, there's likely going to be a need for some individual therapy to help around adjustment to disability. There might be some potential grief issues that play out as a part of that. But also looking at the family, both the partner as well as the children. We want to make sure that both the partner and children are taken care of as well. And so we would potentially look at talking to them as it relates to family therapy, again, as for the adjustment to disability concerns, any grief concerns. If there's an actual, through the evaluation, there may come to light previous psychiatric needs for this member or current psychiatric needs as well. So we would need to look at the array of behavioral health services to address any of those, whether that's, again, some type of individual therapy, maybe psychotropic medications, whatnot. So we would clearly look at that as it all relates to doing that comprehensive biopsychosocial assessment and then making the referrals to the behavioral health providers and having them help drive what those next steps are as far as care needs. Also in this situation, given the complexity of the physical health concern, as well as the adjustment to disability issues, we may look at an integrated health home and make a referral to one of our contracted health homes to really address that whole health of the member as well as of the family. Support services as well, so ensuring that housing is addressed. The scenario doesn't suggest any instability in housing, but we would definitely want to assess and make sure. And as Pat had mentioned in the previous presentation, that we have a housing employment support specialist, so we would draw upon their expertise to help identify those housing needs and match those needs with available services and supports, whether that's through our partnerships with cities, the county, helping those individuals meet their housing needs. Employment, again, the scenario doesn't speak to her currently working or not working, but if she was currently working, we would look at potential employment supports and connecting her to those right services and supports within the community, maybe offering the Arizona Disability Benefits 101 training, also for the partner as well. The partner may or may become the breadwinner, and we need to make sure that the partner has the necessary support. So connecting the partner as well to potentially community resources to help really wrap the family completely around with services to really get to the member's goal, which is clearly states in the presentation that she does not want to miss the key milestones in the lives of her children. And so we need to wrap around those supports and build upon her strengths and the family's strengths. They clearly have many strengths, such as the support of each other, clear goals, and caring deeply for their children. And so we want to draw upon those strengths and do whatever we can to build on those strengths, but also to really meet the goals of the member and her family.
And there's one thing I wanted to add too, and I think it's real important here that we make sure that we involve the ALS Association. They have ALS support groups. They have a lot of resources that they can also offer to these individuals. And if this individual does decide to go to one of our integrated clinics, we have a robust transportation system that would be able to adapt to her changing needs and disabilities, such as wheelchair vans and other modes of transportation that would make it easier for her to get to and from her appointments or other things.
All providers, actually, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Great. So, Pat, can you talk a little bit about, as with the case manager is now mm-hmm. focusing on a care plan, mm-hmm. what would be some of those services that we may be discussing with the member?
Right. So after listening to the member and reviewing with her all the possibilities that we have available and we can explore for her. You know, the case manager will work with the member to identify what does she want to do to meet her goals. What can we do for her? And you know, in this scenario, I would think that probably as much in-home support as we can provide to keep her at home as long as possible and hopefully for the rest of her life. We have dealt with this type of a member in the past, and we know that we can provide enough support in home to keep her there. And I think the case manager letting her know that that's available and is going to alleviate some of her fears, hopefully, her concerns, and so that she can rest assured that she will be able to stay home with her children. And so in-home support as far as attendant care, if she progresses to the point where she needs ventilator care or any nursing care, we certainly would have in-home nursing, home health nursing, even if she's not to the point where she needs a ventilator care, but in-home nursing to assess on a regular basis, you know, her skin condition, her medications, her durable medical equipment needs. Is she going to need a wheelchair, ambulatory equipment, pressure-relieving mattresses, those types of things. Home modifications, she may need a ramp to get into the home. She may need widening of doors to get wheelchair through. She's wheelchair dependent, roll-in shower chairs, those types of things we can do to help her have the supports that she can stay at home. Along with all the referrals we would make to outside the home, community resources like ALS to support her. And, you know, we want to provide what we can do to help her meet her goals, and so that with the supports that we have, you know, she will have, we hope, the best quality of life she has for the rest of her life. Anything else that you think we want to do?
I think one of the other aspects is we want to make sure that she's connected to legal resources for mm-hmm. various reasons, both for planning as it relates to the children, but also planning for the now and making sure that From a legal perspective, things are addressed for the family depending on what issues are identified from a
right.
legal
perspective.
Right,
and that's a really important issue that our case managers are trained to talk with members about. Even if you don't think you need this right now, advance directives are important to do right now for all of us so that we are in a state of mind where now we can make our choices and not to wait to the point where it's going to be a burden to our caregiver, our family and partners to make those decisions for us.
Part of that too is as we're looking at the care plan is planning for the what if as well. So sometimes she may have a worsening of symptoms in a particular given day or week, and discussing the potential need for respite in those situations. She may start beginning to have behavioral health symptoms or the worsening of those symptoms, and so we want to make sure that she and the family know how to access crisis services and has a potential crisis plan too, depending on what is presenting at that moment.
And just quickly, there are patients that do decide, I do not want interventions like ventilators, feeding tubes. These are very difficult discussions, and oftentimes the family pushes, we want to keep you here as long. That's the other supports that we would really want to provide to this family to be sure that her wishes were heard and that we could then help support the family to support those wishes.
You know, and one of the things that I think is important there is, in fact, that we know through our experience that there is a gap between advanced care planning and what happens in reality in the United States. While even those people who have an advanced care plan often do not have those wishes honored. Therefore, Mercy Care Plan, and as mentioned here earlier, has been a real leader in the state in working with others to make sure that support groups, legal processes, things that, quote, address the social determinants of health are a part of our processes. And for example, within the area of advanced care planning, we have staff who are leaders on the Thoughtful Life Conversations project with the Arizona Hospital and Healthcare Association, which is attempting to input evidence-based practices that will increase the likelihood that people's wishes are provided. We're working with programs from multiple different backgrounds, such as American Indian populations, tribal leaders in these areas, working with others from very variety of different work groups to understand what is necessary to help make sure that we have people's wishes followed. We've also developed a Mercy Care Life and Health Planning Toolkit that gives people that kind of information that will help them in their day-to-day care. And we work with legal agencies from across a wide range of areas.
Thank you, Dr. Wilson. As the team has shared, you know, planning is going to be critical for this member and her family. And we know that there is a growing community of LGBTQ in the state here. And we've actually have partnered down in Tucson with Project Visibility and to bring that additional education that is unique and different, and it is catered to this this LGBT population so that members' wishes and desires and are being followed at the very end. Dr. Wilson, you mentioned a little bit about palliative care. We have a program that we've been working with the Arizona Palliative Care. Can you share a little bit about the successes we're seeing from that program?
Right, very much so. What we're seeing is that by providing palliative care, an evidence-based practice that focuses on the non-curative, high-quality life services, we're actually able to help people remain independent in their home longer. It's actually also reduced hospital and emergency room visits, and despite adding services, actually has resulted in a lower per member per month cost of almost $300-$400 for those people who have been enrolled per month in the palliative care program. So we are committed to bringing this to all people who need non-curative services, and to also make sure that people recognize that this is something that's brought in early in one's life, and that sometimes people have concerns or fears about it being only an end-of-life and hospice-type situation. But we do a great job of working with people to recognize that addressing quality of life early in one's life is actually the best, one of the best ways that we can do to help this person meet her goals and see her children's key milestones.
Great. Thank you. Patty, as this member has ALS and there will be different providers involved and potential placements, Can you share a little bit about our network and our providers?
Yes, we again have a very robust network. We can provide any specialty that we don't have, or we do have just about everything. I can't think of any specialty that we don't offer that's available. As we mentioned, we have many in-home physicians that can go in. If she needs to see specialists, we will make sure that she has the transportation to get there. I also wanted to just mention why we're taking all of this care of our member. We are taking into consideration, as we've mentioned before, the family and the children. This member is obviously very concerned about her children, and while the children are a big part of her life, we want to make sure that they understand that this is a debilitating disease and the progression, so that they know when mom's not quite the same. You know, they are still at the ages of 8, 10, and 15. They have needs as children, and we don't want to overlook those needs of those children. So we're going to do everything we can to support the kids and the family along the way.
This is, I think, a perfect situation where falling to the Alltech's guiding principles is really, really critical, and being member-centered and providing member-directed options and most integrated setting and collaborating with stakeholders is so critical. And we feel very strongly that none of our case managers, none of our staff veer away from any of those Alltech's guiding principles.
And Pat's comment there about thinking of the entire family is important as well. Often pets are a most important part of a member's family. And recognizing this and recognizing that's actually been a barrier to people going into the hospital or receiving care, we've implemented a program called Mercy Paws, where we communicate with we have a program that if a person needs to leave their pet, that we will assure that their pet is cared for, including veterinary services, free of charge to the member for the duration of that separation from their pet.
Dr. Wilson, can you share briefly, as this member is 35, and I'm sure technology does play an active role in her life, we do offer some solutions and some apps that are available to our members.
Well, a number of things, not only text, SafeLink, phones and communication devices, websites, mobile devices, text messaging, voice automated calls. And the other thing that we do is we also bring such technology to our providers. So all of our providers who are participating within our Practice Innovation Institute, which is something that we do to help improve quality of care, allows our practitioners to share real-time data, admissions, discharges, emergency room visits across the Health Information Network, and to receive gaps in care information and other things that help them better serve their members.
In fact, our two home physician programs, we have over 2,500 members assigned, and there is electronic medical records that the case managers are able to access and to view in real time those medical records.
That's right. So the services are shared across the entire care team at the plan and at the direct member level.
As Patty was sharing, you know, the children are a key priority to us as well, and we want to ensure that the children during this period of time are experiencing a positive life environment, and having mom being involved, maybe doing voice recordings so that the children can look back and remember on the good times and not just focus on the difficult times. As we conclude here, it is important that we do try to do provide services to keep that member at home, out of an institution, surrounding the loved ones with the support so that everybody does feel that their needs are being met, and that the member is able at the very end, where we follow her wishes and not place her against her will, where that's where her final days, where she doesn't want to be. So again, thank you so much for this opportunity, for allowing us to present today, and that concludes.
Okay, thank you. So this concludes the oral presentation part of the RFP process. Thank you for participating. The oral presentation will be scored and the results included as a part of the RFP score. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.